Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Early Spanish Texas was dotted with missions and presidios. Some still stand, and others are lost to time. The mission Nuestra Señora del Espíritu Santo, translated to Our Lady of the Holy Spirit, was in the latter category. An archaeological team from Texas Tech University and the Texas Historical Commission recently discovered evidence of the mission on a private ranch in southeast Texas in Jackson County, solving a 300-year mystery. Texas Tech Associate Professor of Archaeology Tamara Walter led a team at the site. She says Espíritu Santo had historical ties to French Louisiana and to the doomed French explorer La Salle.
Prior to the establishment of the mission, the French explorer La Salle had established a colony in the area. And this was towards the end of the 17th century. This, of course, was something that Spain was very concerned about. They didn't want France to get a stronghold or foothold into what they claimed as Spanish territory or Spanish Texas, because Spanish Texas was really the last line of defense against those intrusions or incursions into the rich silver mining area of what is today northern Mexico. So when word got out that they had a colony there, Spain reacted immediately by sending out expeditions to try to find the place, and they finally did. But when they got there, La Salle had already left. He had been killed by his own men, and the French colonists had either all been killed, a few of them were taken by the Carranqua, and you know, there was no one left. Those events spurred Spain into action in terms of colonizing Texas, because they really hadn't given it much thought till then. And they realized, oh gosh, this is a real threat. So they sent out missionaries into East Texas, what is today East Texas, in hopes of colonizing the area and having a stronger presence. Those missions did not succeed. And this is just the 1690s. And so they retreat. And it takes them 30 years since the French left for them to return to try again to bring missionaries and military presence into the area. And so when they return, they come back to what was Fort St. Louis, and they establish Presidio La Bahia on that exact location. And then just across the way, they established Mission Espiritu Santo. And again, this was an effort to try to colonize and protect that frontier from foreign incursions, and especially against the French. So very, very paranoid about that. So this is sort of what was going on during this time period when they were establishing the Mission of Espiritu Santo.
And I know that usually when the Spanish would establish these communities, they would establish sort of a presidio for the soldiers and a mission. Was that the case for this particular location?
Yes, in most of Texas, that's how it was. You would have a mission and a presidio. In case of San Antonio, as you are already aware, you'd have a presidio and then multiple missions. And the idea was that, well, we don't have enough of our own people to colonize the area, so let's just convert the indigenous population. And we, you know, in 9, 10, 11 years, they'll be converted to Spanish citizens. They'll be civilized, quote unquote, and they'll be loyal to the Spanish crown. And they'll help us protect the frontier. And the military presence was there to also protect and help oversee the missionary operation. So the idea was that eventually, if this was successful, they would colonize the area more broadly, bring in civilian settlers, and that this would be sort of the start of that. But of course, that's not what happened.
So why did this particular mission site fail within a few years? I mean, is it because that this particular part of Texas, of Spanish Texas at the time, was sort of this vast, unexplored wasteland?
I mean, that was part of it, is that you're isolated. It's difficult to get supplies there. You're also dealing with indigenous groups that were resistant to missionization. I mean, you've got to have their buy-in for this to work. And the Carranqua weren't buying in. So, you know, this added to their frustration that nothing was happening. Add to that, that it was a pretty hostile environment in terms of the local surroundings. You know, it's a lot of mosquitoes. It's hot. There were alligators in the creek, and they were just miserable. And they couldn't get the Karankawa to enter into the missions. And so they're not there all that long before they start looking elsewhere and say, okay, maybe we can go somewhere else, where we've got groups of people who are going to be more conducive to mission life. So, you know, all of those things factored in to what would eventually be the failure of that location. Now, I should mention that the mission itself didn't end. It just relocated. The mission in Goliad is, of course, the final location of that mission that started at this first location.
Yeah, that's really an important point to make, because I myself didn't realize this until pretty recently, that missions do relocate. And yes, I know there are some missions in the Rio Grande Valley that have relocated to other places and vice versa. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, this happened quite a bit for multiple reasons. You know, they had a reorganization of this northern frontier province to try to protect, that all kinds of plans. You know, they weren't successful. Certain locations, you know, in East Texas, they struggled there. So yeah, it was a very common occurrence for missions to move for a variety of reasons. And so there are four locations. A lot of people don't know that about Espiritu Santo. There's actually four locations of that mission. I guess the traditional story has been there's only three, but we now know that they had a mission in Victoria City Park before they moved to a site in Mission Valley, and then again moved to where it is today in Goliad. So yeah, this is a very common thing. And that is why we have so many quote-unquote lost missions, is because they move so many times.
Tamara Walter is an associate professor of archaeology at Texas Tech University. She and a team of students and archaeologists from the Texas Historical Commission discovered the lost mission site of Nuestra Señora del Espíritu Santo in present-day Jackson County, Texas. When we come back, the rediscovery of the lost Espíritu Santo mission involved professional archaeologists and students just entering the field.
I also think that it reaffirmed their enthusiasm and passion for archaeology. You know, these artifacts, nobody's touched since they left. So the fact that we're, you know, physically touching history, I think that really struck a chord with all of them.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
A donation comes in many forms, a sustaining membership, a one-time gift, even a home, land, or commercial property. Donating property is a great way to support the station you love, and you may even claim a tax deduction. Get the process started today. Call 844-277-HOME or visit tpr.careasy.org/real-estate-donation to learn more.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. It's been 300 years since Spanish missionaries abandoned the mission Nuestra Señora del Espíritu Santo in present-day southeast Texas, east of Victoria and west of Houston. Teams of archaeologists have searched for the site for years. A collaboration between Texas Tech University and the Texas Historical Commission resulted in a discovery on a private ranch near Presidio La Bahia and the former site of the ill-fated Fort St. Louis, where the French explorer La Salle established a colony on his search for the mouth of the Mississippi River. Texas Tech archaeologist Tamara Walter talks about why it took so long to finally discover the Espíritu Santo site and how they found it.
The reason why these sites were lost is because they weren't building masonry structures there. They didn't have enough stone for that. So it's not visible on the surface, first of all. Second of all, the areas that we're talking about today, they've been overgrazed. So as a result, there's a lot of vegetation to get through. It isn't easy to find these sites. And, you know, it all started with the search for Fort St. Louis. We knew if we could find Fort St. Louis, we could find the other sites. And of course, Fort St. Louis and La Bahia were found in the late 90s. But, you know, this mission eluded us for a long time. Scholars in particular, like Kay Hines, who you may or may not know, was for a long time the archaeologist for the city of San Antonio, has been hunting for this mission a long time. She's a colleague and a friend of mine, combing through all of the documentary records to try to help us find the site. So there were a lot of challenges, in addition to the environment being difficult to get through, the historical records. The maps aren't precise, and there are sometimes contradictions when it comes to distances from one site to the other. And so for a long, long, long time, archaeologists have been searching for this site. I mean, pretty much since these guys left, it's been lost. So, you know, I feel really lucky to have been part of the team that helped find it. But it's important to note that we're building on the research of others before us that have done a lot of the groundwork. And, you know, I just happen to be lucky enough to be with the team that actually found it. And having, you know, funding and support from the Summerlee Foundation has obviously been really critical for allowing us to find it, because we had to do a lot of clearing of brush in order for us to find any trace of this site, because, again, it isn't visible on the surface.
And so tell us about how you were able to find evidence of it. I know that you had a team of students who were also working with you.
I have some Texas Tech undergraduate and graduate archaeology students that helped, along with some folks, again, from the Texas Historical Commission. And when we went out, let's see, last spring, we went out in April. You know, this is located on private property, and we were poking around sort of in the areas that were clear, you know, the areas that didn't have a lot of brush in it. And we were using, in a systematic way, metal detectors, searching for metal artifacts that would reflect a Spanish colonial occupation. And so we were really encouraged by those initial results. We had some lead shot. We had a pair of scissors. What else did we find? A trade ring. These are all really exciting things. And we sent off the lead shot that we had found for isotope analysis, which basically told us where the lead came from, which was from the Bocas de Leones mines, which is where the Spanish were getting their lead to make their ammunition. So that was a big hint. Okay, we're in the right spot. But we couldn't get into areas, in some areas, because of the brush. So that's when the Summerlee Foundation funding really helped, because we were then able to use this money to do some land clearing, where we could get in there and do a more systematic metal detecting survey along with a pulse induction survey to find additional artifacts that reflected, okay, oh yeah, these are domestic artifacts, or people are living here. Parts of door hardware. We found more brass trade rings, which the missionaries would have used to try to entice indigenous communities into the mission and also trade for things. There was also evidence of slags, so where a blacksmith shop would have been, pot handles, things like that, and even some pottery. So, you know, those were all really good signs that we had the right spot.
I mean, it's got to be really exciting for students to sort of be involved in this whole discovery process, because, you know, you read about history and you see it sort of from a different perspective until you actually have your hands on it, or you see evidence of it in first place. But when you're actually sort of rediscovering it, I can't imagine what kind of reaction your students might have had to that. Can you share what they might have told you about what they were experiencing?
Oh, I think they were all as excited as I was. And, it, you know, to be able to experience that for me was just so gratifying, to know that, hey, you're part of something that most people don't get to experience. And I also think that it reaffirmed their enthusiasm and passion for archaeology. You know, these artifacts, nobody's touched since they left. So the fact that we're, you know, physically touching history, I think that really struck a chord with all of them. And two of them have now, you know, this was in the spring, have now applied for graduate study and continuing their love for archaeology by pursuing a graduate degree in Spanish colonial archaeology. So for me, it's really, really been great to see all of that happen.
So what is this site telling us about maybe what we didn't previously know about Spanish exploration or the Spanish missionaries of that particular time in this part of the state?
Well, this is granted, you know, you had the 1690s East Texas missions, which didn't last very long. This one didn't last very long either. And, you know, you talked about the Socorro missions, but technically those weren't part of Spanish Texas. So when you talk about Spanish Texas, this is one of the earliest missions that's been found. So for us, what we hope to learn is what was life like for these guys at this moment in time. We don't often get this snapshot like this. And you can look at the missions. You know, archaeologists have been working at the San Antonio missions for a long time. But the difference there is that you've got almost 100 years of occupation there. And so the later occupations obscure the earlier occupations. So this is the short-lived 1721, 22 to 1725, 26. That's 4 or 5 year period where we get a window into what it was like to live in Spanish Texas on the frontier at that moment in time. What they thought they needed, the arrangement of buildings, how they thought that the a mission should function, and you know, what life was like for them. So that is a really unique opportunity that we don't often get in Texas archaeology, an opportunity to see that a unique moment in time. And that's what this site is offering us.
And I also think it's really fascinating. I'm reading a book right now about Los Adaes, which was a Spanish mission on the East Texas-Louisiana border that was established maybe around the same time as Espiritu Santo. And I thought it was just really fascinating of sort of the cross-culture interactions between the Spanish and the Louisiana, the French in Louisiana, and the indigenous people who were there. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, you've got the French, you've got the Spanish, and you've got indigenous populations that are all interacting at Los Adaes. And you know what? Technically, the Spanish weren't supposed to be trading with the French, but you see all kinds of French goods at these Spanish sites, particularly in that part of the what is today Texas, right? They're close to French Louisiana, and so there's a lot of illicit trade happening, and we see that archaeologically, right? And you know, the Native Americans are also trading. Native Americans are getting French guns, and we see that in the archaeological record. You know, you talk about some of the East Texas missions when they tried to come back and reestablish some of the missions there around the same time as they were reestablishing Mission Espiritu Santo. They talk about the Spanish first coming to one site in particular, Mission Concepcion, the first location of Mission Concepcion. Of course, that moves to San Antonio later out in East Texas. But the missionaries say when they encountered the Caddo, they said, you know, they have more guns than we do. So that is a result of all the trading that's going on at Los Adaes, at the Presidio, and, you know, all the things that are happening at that location. And you see that archaeologically. It's very, very clear. You see in East Texas and sites like Espiritu Santo, you see evidence of that trade. It will be really interesting to see if we've got period French ceramics showing up at this mission, which is also going to give us insight into looking the other way and trading, even though they know they're not supposed to, because there's a need for it, because they're not getting enough through traditional means. So yeah, it's fascinating stuff.
And so what's next for your research at this site? What do you have planned here in the next few years?
Well, we are going to be returning next month. We're going to do a magnetometer survey, which will hopefully give us a much better sense of the extent of the features at this mission. As I said earlier, there, you know, these were temporary Wadlandob like mud huts that they were living in. And a magnetometer survey can help identify those features and related artifacts. So we want to find the boundaries, the complete boundaries of the site. And that means clearing more areas and doing more remote sensing. And then once that's done, the plan is to do full-scale excavation to completely define the arrangement of those buildings, because we don't know exactly what that site looked like. What kinds of buildings were there? You know, are we talking about a convento and a few houses and a church? You know, what did this site look like? So that's one of the first things we're hoping to accomplish. And, you know, then looking for evidence of activities and kinds of things that, again, these people were doing on a daily basis.
Well, who owns that land right now? Is it privately owned land and you had permission to go?
Yes, it is privately owned land, and they've been gracious enough to allow us to conduct the research here, and they've been very supportive of everything, but they're very private people too. So, which is understandable. You know, you don't want people poking around. I mean, the concern is that you don't want people to come out and start digging on their own. So we're very protective about the particular location of the site, but yeah, it is privately owned.
Well, Tamara, is there anything else that I didn't get a chance to ask you about that you wanted to talk about during this conversation before we wrap things up?
I would reiterate that this was a collaborative effort with the Texas Historical Commission. You know, we had people who were very instrumental to helping us find this, Kay Hines being one of the most important researchers, who's a San Antonio native, and, you know, Jim Brusseth and Tiffany Osborne and Brad Jones were all THC folks. You know, if it weren't for them, we wouldn't have been able to accomplish all of this. So it wasn't just me. So I think that's the thing that I worry about, is that I want other people to, you know, share in this achievement, because it was a team effort.
Well, Tamara Walter, been a pleasure talking to and learning more about this period of history here on Fronteras. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Tamara Walter is an associate professor of archaeology at Texas Tech University. She and a team of archaeologists from the Texas Historical Commission and students from Texas Tech have discovered the site of the lost mission Nuestra Señora del Espíritu Santo in Jackson County in southeast Texas. See photos from the excavation site, including some of the found artifacts, at tpr.org. Fronteras editors are Dan Katz and Yvette Benavides. Chiranga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.